Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, talking USC football recruiting. Sort of was slow, USC recruiting for a little while. Not so much anymore, so we needed to do our Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast for all of our USCFootball.com subscribers, and who better to talk to than Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. He's awesome. Does a great job for us at USCFootball.com for over 15 years. It's a long time, Gerard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It feels like the 2009 recruiting cycle was 15 years in 1 year. It had a lot of ups and downs. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. Certainly the strangest recruiting cycle I think we've ever covered. And it hasn't completely ended yet. No. Even though we're already on to 2020 and we're looking at 2020 kids and we're talking about the 2020 class, the 2019 recruiting cycle will not die.
It will not. I think you said 2009 going into it. I was like, well, was there something that was way back in the day? But 2019, yes, it's crazy. Wasn't ranked very high, but it's not over. The fat lady hasn't sung on this recruiting class. There's a few things we got to talk about. There's some five-star players out there that didn't end up at USC, or in one case did end up at USC, then not at USC. Could again. So we have to start with Brew McCoy. So if you've been living under a rock, the reason you're probably listening to this podcast is because the former five-star athlete from modern day who picked USC, signed with USC, enrolled at USC, then transferred out of USC 2 weeks later, picked Texas, enrolled in Texas, went through spring football in Texas, and now has been in Los Angeles with his family for the last couple of weeks. All the speculation is he's going to leave Texas and end up at USC. Gerard had some amazing updates. Chris Trevito was one out there breaking the story. Greg Biggins, we've got a lot of good stuff from him. He's been real tight with the McCoy crew all the way through. But Gerard, we have to get your opinion. What the heck is going on here with Brew McCoy?
Yeah, what is going on? Not to kind of rehash everything, but to kind of get people up to speed, just in sort of how we got to the point we are now. You know, obviously he transferred from USC and went to Texas. From what we started to gather, he wasn't really happy at Texas. And the specifics of that are still unknown. And we didn't really get a lot of specifics as to why he left USC. The implication was certainly that with Cliff Kingsbury leaving, he was sold on that type of offense. He had a good relationship with Cliff Kingsbury. And then he left, and he felt somewhat, I guess, betrayed. And again, I don't know if I really agree with that. I think that maybe was more of an excuse, maybe something that they could have used to try to get the waiver to be able to play right away with the transfer to Texas. I think, you know, obviously that was kind of out of USC's hands. The guy turns around and gets a pro head coaching job. You know, USC can't really do anything about that. And I don't think a whole lot of people foresaw that happening. It was speculated, but I can say myself sincerely did not believe for a minute that an NFL team would come in and swoop up a college coach who went 7-6 and was fired from Texas Tech. So I think, you know, that was out USC's hands. I don't know if that was a real excuse. I think really the reason it was just the culture and sort of the feel of USC at that point in time. He was there 2 weeks in January. There wasn't a lot of coaches on campus because they were still out on the road recruiting. The coaching staff at that point was still a little bit in flux because you didn't have an offensive coordinator. Graham Harrell was not hired yet. You didn't know exactly what direction the offense was going to go in. Were they going to stick with the air raid, which is what Brew McCoy was sort of sold on, or were they going to go with a different type of offense depending on who they hired? So that was obviously up in the air. They didn't have a strength and conditioning coach. And I think this actually played a very big role. Now, again, this is more conjecture and speculation based on sources and things that I've heard. I think that that was sort of a big deal because there was not a lot of organization with the off-season workouts. There wasn't a philosophy in place. It was just kind of, hey, we're pulling this together and we're going to see what happens, with basically John Baxter and Clay Helton the only ones on campus because all the rest of the coaching staff are out actually recruiting. So it was a weird time for USC, and I think there was a lot of negativity, and there's still a lot of negativity. I mean, there's certainly a lot of unanswered questions in terms of the trajectory of the program and even the university for that standpoint. You know, you got a new president that's going to be here in the next month or so. Everything sort of has to get settled in. You know, what's the overall mission of the university and everything? And I think all those things sort of play in. But, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. And I think Brew probably went to Texas. He was recruited pretty heavily there, not only by the Texas coaches, but by DeGabriel Floyd. DeGabriel Floyd was somebody he was pretty close with. DeGabriel Floyd has spinal nucleosis, I think it is. And that's a degenerative thing. He may not even be able to play college football. We're really not sure about what his future is going to be. Hopefully he gets that chance to. He's a fantastic player, a really good kid. But now, all of a sudden, you know, Brew doesn't have the people there. Maybe he thought we're going to be there also. Maybe he doesn't, you know, vibe as much as he thought he was going to in Texas. And he's got second thoughts. And now USC, with an offense in place, having gone through spring ball, talking to a lot of his friends, and he's got a bunch of friends on the football team. He's got JT Daniels there. He's got Amon-Ra St. Brown, Kyle Ford. There's a bunch of guys that are close to the football team that now know the offense, see the offense, and can talk to him about the offense. And I'm sure they have plenty of conversations. I mean, they're going to share their experiences with spring football and just college football in general. And those guys probably feel much better about how the offense is and the direction the Trojans' offense is going and sort of, you know, what's there. And there's not as much uncertainty. So I could see that playing a big role. I think with strength and conditioning, you know, that's also a big role. Now you've got somebody in there that has a philosophy. Whether you agree with it or not, it's there and there's purpose and the guys are organized and they're going forward. So, you know, all those things I think play into kind of what has happened at this point. Now, you mentioned Brew has been out here for the past couple of weeks from what we understand. Texas is still trying to get him back to Texas. From what we gather, Tom Herman has not had direct conversation with Brew McCoy yet. The Texas coaching staff in general, according to my sources, was completely taken off guard by all of this, which is par for the course because USC's coaching staff was taken completely off guard when Brew McCoy left USC the first time. And this was after, you know, he almost transferred earlier and the family actually got a lawyer and they were already kind of thinking, okay, if we want to make this move, we need to get organized. We need to get set up. We need to know the process and everything that we have to do in order to make it go smoothly because they did want Brew to be able to play as a true freshman. Now I think the whole playing as a true freshman thing is kind of out the window. It's like, okay, if it happens, it happens. But they're probably not as focused on that part of it. So Texas is still trying to work. We think that Tom Herman probably comes in later this week to be able to talk to the family. I know the receivers coach was trying to reach out to Brew. But like I said before, I don't believe that they've necessarily had direct contact with Brew himself. Perhaps the family, but not Brew himself. So that's kind of an interesting thing. The Texas coaching staff is actually on vacation, so all this sort of broke on them when they were away from campus. So the whole thing is still evolving, and we don't know 100% sure if he's going to end up at USC. It seems like that. Right now, it seems like that's definitely what he's leaning towards doing, and we should probably have an idea of that probably before next week. I think before the week ends, we should probably know whether he's going to hit that transfer portal or not.
Yeah, this is such a unique and crazy situation. And the NCAA transfer portal getting all this publicity for a kid who, if you just went to high school like a regular kid, you would be graduating sometime in the next few weeks. For Brew McCoy, graduating early, he's already been enrolled in two colleges. And a lot of his classmates haven't even graduated from high school yet, which is insane. But I think some of this is too, the point you brought up about how disorganized USC was during that transition. I think they got things going by the time spring ball started, but it took a while. They needed to make changes. Probably you could argue they needed to make some more changes than what they actually did. But when Brew McCoy was there, it was this crazy transition time. And there was and to have something like a Cliff Kingsbury leave in the middle of all that had to be somewhat disheartening, but just make it look even worse than it was. And you forget, Brew McCoy got spring football practice at Texas. He didn't get anything like that at USC. What he got at USC for the 2 weeks he was there were their offseason workouts. And when you don't have a strength and conditioning coach, that's who your main contact is during the, if you're not in spring football, you're not in fall camp, you're with your strength and conditioning coach. Well, that was gone. Then the top three guys or whatever left, right? So you really had nothing there. They hadn't had a replacement. USC's in a much better spot now. Everything we've heard from players is Aaron Osmus is someone that the players like, and sometimes it's just getting a new face in there, but you have an authority figure in there who's running things and working out a little bit differently. It's more of a, strength stuff. They're putting more muscle on, add more weight, but they, at least, like you said, it has a direction. The offense, again, you got Graham Harrell. It's simpler. They have a direction. They're on the right path, and they look on paper, or if you just walked into it, they would look a lot better right now, Gerard, than what they did back in January. So it's sort of one of these things, you get the feeling that you're making a long-term decision when you're picking a college, and you feel like maybe you were using short-term information, to make your, make a decision back in January to transfer. And who knows, maybe it could be a same sort of thing right now. I think in Chip Brown's story, he hasn't experienced like what it's like on Texas game days. Like you might be homesick now, but he might really enjoy, when like fall in Texas, that might be a whole lot of fun. So I don't know. This just seems very strange that you're making these like kind of quick decisions for something that really should be a long-term play, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I think that's really some of it. And that's what partly USC sells, is you get these college towns, and Austin's not necessarily just a college town. So I wouldn't necessarily put that, in that category. But I think with a lot of these smaller college towns, the kids go there and they visit, and it's all about college football and the atmosphere of college football. And that's great for a Saturday, but you have to live there the rest of your life. And there's a lot of times where there's nothing going on. That's the college is basically the town, the city itself. And if it's not game day and it's not revolving around football, then, it's not somewhere you necessarily would want to live. And so I think that's an aspect that he probably did, have to adjust to in Austin. And like I said, Austin's not necessarily one of those towns. There's a lot going on in Austin, but it's not Southern California either. There's nowhere like Southern California. I mean, if you really enjoy living in Southern California and you take advantage of Southern California and everything that it has to offer, you're never going to find anywhere probably on the planet that's like Southern California. So there is sort of that away from football. And I think you make a good point. And even the original decision he made to leave USC, that wasn't really even USC at that point from a football standpoint. You're looking at, this is not Texas necessarily from a football standpoint, because you have, no game day, and you have, no big time hype, and everybody's all buzzed up about football season. It's the off season and people are just doing what people do in Texas. Whereas with USC, it wasn't really football either, because at that point it was in flux. They're trying to find coaches. They're trying to figure out what are they going to do? What's the next move with the offense? How are they going to get better? I think, one of the things is that Brew McCoy should do 100% is that, at some point he has to sit down, obviously, with Graham Harrell, and they have to have that conversation and get that vibe. And I think that Graham Harrell will actually do really well there, and that will probably work well for USC, because at that point, what Brew remembers about USC was having no offensive coordinator and no direction. And the one thing we know with Graham Harrell, he has a lot of direction. He has a lot of foresight into what he wants to do, how he wants to run the offense. He's been given autonomy. you just feel it in the way he talks about the offense and what they have to do and what they have to get done. He knows exactly. He has a vision, you know, exactly what the offense has to be and how it has to get done. And so I think that will also work for USC. But before, you know, Brew can have that conversation with him, he's got to go in the transfer portal. It has to be official. You know, he has to transfer out of Texas. And so that's why I believe that's going to happen. Now, is it the end? You know, does it mean that he's completely going to leave Texas? Maybe not. You know, there's a possibility that he goes to the porthole and then he still entertains conversations with the Texas coaches as well. And he starts to think about it. But yeah, before he can really know USC and know where he would fit in with their offense, he has to sort of have that sit down with the coaches and this new staff, you know, Mike Jenks and everybody that's, you know, involved with making it and changing, you know, what they've been doing the last few years. So I think that is a good point. I would also go back to the point you made about Aaron Osmus, and specifically, and this, I'm going to lay another layer of conjecture on here. I'm going to have to kind of say that outright, prefix it. I think that Amon-Ra St. Brown, and specifically his dad, John Brown, I think played a big factor in that, because I know, you know, all those modern day families and everybody sort of talks, and John Brown, obviously being a Mr. Universe Olympia, I can't remember which one specifically, but obviously knows his weightlifting. Okay, the guy knows weightlifting and can speak as an authority on conditioning and training. And I think there was a lot of uncertainty, and there wasn't a lot of praise going on with how that situation was being handled. You know, Clay Helton did not get somebody in there real quick. They did not go out there and try just to get the best guy and throw a bunch of money at a top strength and conditioning coach from another school. In fact, they went after some guys, and I got the impression they lowballed some of those guys with their offer. And so I could see where, you know, maybe Brew McCoy's family is speaking with Amon-Ra St. Brown's family, and Amon-Ra St. Brown's family is not happy with the direction, the way things were going at that point. They didn't like how things were going. And that may change now, you know, that may be something. And again, this is conjecture, I don't know, but I get the vibe that had probably a lot to do with the feelings about USC and what wasn't happening in order to get the program back on the right spot. And certainly, you know, they didn't feel comfortable with who was there with the strength and conditioning staff, because they didn't just promote somebody. They still went out and got somebody else, even though they didn't necessarily go out there and just try to throw a bunch of money at a top staff to bring them in.
So this is obviously a very unique situation, and it's fluid. And I think you and Greg have been on top of this, you know, Chris Trevino putting it out at first. And I think you guys have both have said, and just to make it clear, because Brew McCoy is not in the transfer portal yet, he's not allowed, you can't contact him. So like Clay Helton can't give him a call and be like, hey, Brew, you want to come to USC? Because that's basically tampering with a Texas player. He's a Texas player right now, even though he's, you know, been in LA the last 2 weeks. He's not, you know, currently going to school or whatever right now. But until he goes in there, it's like, I know there's been some erroneous reports out there of saying that, I'll say all kinds of crazy stuff, but I just want to make that clear that the USC really can't talk to him, contact him until he goes in the transfer portal. And there's several unique things here. People will ask about, well, does USC have room? And you know, what my assumption was, and I think you have some confirmation about this, if you didn't know, Brew McCoy was an initial counter for USC because he, you know, USC signed him. He enrolled in school. 2 weeks later, he left and went to Texas. He's an initial counter there, but it doesn't go away. He's still counted as one of the incoming freshmen for USC. He took a spot. Like, there was a legit spot that they couldn't bring another player in because Brew McCoy is there. Well, when he comes back, he's not going to count. My understanding was it shouldn't count twice. And I guess that's what you're hearing as well, Gerard. So it doesn't cost USC another initial counter because he was already being counted when he came in the first time.
Correct. He is being counted twice, but he's being counted twice because he's still an initial counter for Texas and USC, but he won't double at either school. That spot is basically that spot, and he resides at that spot. So either school he ends up at, that initial counter spot is his. So it's not like USC has to make room or there's anything that he is. It's a moot point. He's going to be able to take that spot and come in, and would not it would not disrupt that class at all.
Yeah, so that's the kind of – he would still be an overall counter, and USC has room there, like at 81 scholarships or something like that. So there's that aspect. So there's room because he was already – they had made room for him already. They're already paying the price for signing Brew McCoy. So if he comes back, you're not repaying the price for that. But as far as eligibility goes, from what my understanding was, they didn't actually file the waiver to be eligible right away. I think it was either Greg Biggin's story or Chip Brown's story talking about they were kind of waiting on some of the other big names to see what they used for reasons, and if they could get through, you know, what a hardship waiver, whatever it was, to get eligible right away. Now, if you turn around and switch back to USC, it sounds like they've resounded the fact that they would have to sit out this year. But I don't know, is there any precedent that since he already was enrolled at USC, like he should just be eligible right away because he started there? I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on eligibility for 2019?
I think a transfer is a transfer, and that's the way the NCAA is going to look at it. You know, he transferred from USC, and then he transferred from Texas. So even though he was originally from USC, he's still viewed as a transfer, and he's going to follow the rules of having to sit out a year. So I think that's going to happen. I think that the family has sort of resided in the fact that that's probably going to happen. And it maybe probably was going to happen at Texas anyways. You know, it was really hard to sell that USC had lied to him or whatever sort of reasoning they were going to try to use to get a waiver just because Cliff Kingsbury left. Like I said, I don't really think that was on USC. And I don't know what the petition would have been specifically. Again, this is not stuff that, you know, Brew McCoy had gone into in detail, but you would have assumed just talking to various sources and listening to him talk, the implication was that that was going to be sort of their angle to be able to be eligible at Texas. And we had not heard hide nor hair about whether he was going to be eligible. And in fact, it seemed like it probably wasn't going to happen. And USC, the one thing that they did well there, which is helping them in this process, and also just talking about the process and going back to something you said about USC, knowing that he was going to transfer or having some type of contact, completely erroneous, completely false, just people riffing and not having any sources and knowing what's going on. Brew McCoy's been through this process before. I mean, he went and got a lawyer before he was even transferring out of USC. This is an educated family. They're not just doing things on a whim. They understand, and this is why, you know, I think USC didn't really know a lot about it when he was leaving there, and Texas doesn't really know about it when he's leaving there, because they're keeping their cards close to the vest, and they're going through the process, and they're trying to know exactly what they can and cannot do. So they're not going to be so stupid to just go, oh, yeah, well, let me just call Clay Helton and tell him, hey, I think we're going to leave USC. That's just not going to happen. So that's all kind of completely just people throwing stuff out there to be a part of the story. For USC's part of the process, they did themselves a heck of a lot of good by allowing Brew to go to Texas and not really fighting it. You know, Clay Helton sort of said, hey, you know what, if you're not comfortable here, if you don't feel like this is the right fit for you, then good luck. There really wasn't a whole lot of bad feelings. They left on good terms, and I think that was kind of a big deal also, because now, you know, they know Clay Helton, and they know that he's really got Brew's best interest in his heart, and he allowed him to go through that process and be able to transfer to Texas without there being really a lot of drama, considering, you know, how unique that situation was. I mean, we're talking about unique situations. They're just stacking on top of each other at this point. And so I think that really bodes well for USC now in this process, kind of starting over again with the transfer and, you know, just that relationship that he has with the staff and the trust that he has in the staff. Will Texas handle it the same way that USC did? That's going to be the interesting thing. Obviously, you know, with Texas fans, they feel like, oh, you know, this has to be tampering and this has to be this and that. And USC fans felt the same way, you know, when they were going through the whole process of him transferring from USC. And there was a lot of interesting things, and there was a lot of talk and a lot of allegations thrown around. But, you know, now it's sort of like, you know, the shoe is on the other foot. But really it's more important, not what the fans talk about and what the fans think and say. It's about what the coaches do. And will Tom Herman take the same approach and say, okay, fine, you know what? You don't want to be here. That's okay. Go ahead and go back to USC, and that's that. Or will there be some type of push and some type of shenanigans and some type of threats that go along with it? That we're waiting to see how it all plays out.
So the good term thing I wanted to bring up, because I did Pac-12 radio this morning. I've done a bunch of radio on this already, but that's one of the things I brought up, is that the fact, because he left on such good terms, that probably bodes well for USC. You know, it's like you get a breakup and you're like, yeah, and you don't like slam the door in the person's face. You're like, you know, I get it. If you really like that other person, go ahead. I'm not going to stand in your way. And then when you figure out, like, no, that other person was kind of crap, I want to come back to you. If you like burned it, USC didn't burn any bridges, basically, is what you're saying here. So I think that's a feather in Clay's cap that he was able to do that. One of the things, or a couple of things that they asked me about, I want to get your thoughts on. We don't know if he's going to transfer out still. It looks like it's pretty likely. We don't know if he's going to end up at USC. That does still seem pretty likely. They asked me if there's another school, like if he leaves Texas, like, could he end up at Oregon or UCLA or something? And then what about the reputation aspect of this? I mean, he's a five-star. Is there any, like, could Clay Helton say, you know what, we don't want to bring him back because the optics of this are just terrible? I said no. I think they would 100% bring him back. But any thoughts on that? Because that's going to come up a lot, too, of how this looks to everybody.
Yeah, I think 100% they bring him back. It is a question, you know, further with the commitment of the players and the team, and it's something that will come up. You know, are they recruiting the right guys? They're recruiting guys that, you know, have the determination and the persistence to win football games when maybe, you know, the times are not great and everything's not going their way, sort of thing. I can see that being a criticism, but I don't think that at all will stop the coaching staff from welcoming him, you know, with open arms with the team. And I think the team itself, just because he has so many friends on the team and everything, I really don't think that would be an issue at all. In terms of other schools that he could end up at, you know, we really haven't heard a lot. You know, I doubt UCLA. He had some interest in UCLA, but I really doubt UCLA. Oregon always seems to be there. Oregon had to make room for Chris Steele. I'm sure they would find a way to make room for Brew McCoy as well. But Oregon really wasn't a school that he was very high on. So, you know, there's really not a lot of other schools that come to mind right off the bat that would be, you know, on the West Coast that would be close. Obviously, if it's homesickness that's the underlying issue, then that's why it's really kind of has to be USC. And I just don't think there was really any other school, really besides Texas, in his recruitment that he really seriously considered. And so it really became about USC and Texas down the line. It wasn't like Chris Steele, who had Texas and Oklahoma, and he took all these visits and he committed to all of these different schools. I think 24/7 had done a video with him at the Army All-American game, which is now the NBC All-American game. And he talked about the 7 or 8 different commitments that he had made silently, let alone, you know, the 4 or 5 that he had made publicly. So with him, when he transferred, there were more options that were a possibility. But with Brew, it really came down to Texas and USC, and really USC, USC, and USC. And it was really towards the end of the year where USC was struggling. People were saying, you know, Clay Helton has to be fired, et cetera, where Texas sort of made their move. And you know, Tom Herman is got a very specific plan. And we talk about certainty and uncertainty in recruiting. And it's just such a huge thing. Uncertainty just erodes your ability to recruit. And USC still has uncertainty, but they had a lot of uncertainty at the end of last season. And there's people that felt like, you know, Clay Helton getting fired was a foregone conclusion. I mean, I remember it. I remember in October telling people, over and over again. Listen, it's probably not going to happen. You guys, there's not a number there of games that he loses that the administration just says, okay, you're gone. It's just not going to happen. It's not how things are going on behind the scenes. But when you had so many people talking about it publicly, you know, these kids hear it, and so they start to feel it as well. At this point, I think he understands that, you know, we still don't know what Clay Helton's future is going to be like, but next season will probably determine it, and we're going to see, you know, what goes on from there. But again, you also have to look at the things off the field and off of football and how that impacts him and the lifestyle and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, he may have come this determination that, hey, you know what, I want to go to a school where I feel being a student is where I want to be. I just, you know, it's not just being football player, but maybe the things outside of football are impacting me more than I ever thought they were. So again, you know, that's conjecture, but in terms of the two schools he was looking at, it was really Texas and USC. There really wasn't like a third or fourth school that was really vying for his commitment.
And then, so is there going to be a hit reputation wise? Like I said before, most of everyone in his high school class is still in high school. He's going to join wherever he ends up. Like if he comes back to USC, there's going to be dudes in his recruiting class that just left high school and then came to USC. He had left high school, went to USC, went to Texas, and went back to USC. I mean, this is very strange for the short amount of time. Is there any worry from the family or anyone you've heard that, man, this is just not going to make him look good, and unless he's like a superstar in college, there's going to be a lot of criticism and people just really upset with everything Brew McCoy's done in his short college career?
Well, I mean, why would anybody be upset? You know, he doesn't owe anything to anybody. I mean, he's going there, he's going to get his education, they're giving him a scholarship just like any other player, and if it works out and he ends up being the five-star out of college, like the five-star he was out of Modern Day, then that's great. He fulfills his potential. Does his reputation take a hit? No. I mean, reputation to me, I know what you're saying. You're saying in terms of football and his sort of, you know, how touted he is and the expectations, I guess, maybe take a hit. But I think overall you have to look at the young man when you start to take, reputation into account and character. And I think, you know, that this doesn't make him a bad kid, you know, because he went through this. It makes him indecisive. It obviously, you know, he thought that USC was one thing and then it wasn't what he thought. And then he went to Texas and he thought it was one thing and it wasn't what he thought. I think it's just a matter of priorities and understanding what you really want and understanding, like you said, the long term of your decisions and what you're comfortable with, and you know, things may not be great right now, right here, but you have to look at, you know, how they're going to be 6 months down the line, how they're going to be 4 years down the line, and how that impacts your life overall. I think those are all things, and he's a young man, and obviously, you know, his family has allowed him just to make his own decisions, and this is really where the debate comes in, because this also goes with Chris Steele, and I've had long conversations with Chris Steele's father about the process. Chris Steele's family wants him at USC still. They wanted him at USC, and they were very vehement about that. And they did not like Oregon. And they weren't really all that jazzed up about Florida either. And I think Florida sort of became almost like the compromise. Oklahoma was a possibility that would have been a compromise pick as well. But I think it was really one of those things where they just did not like Oregon at all. And yet they said, this is going to be his decision. He's becoming a grown man. Chris has got to make his own decision. He's got to live with those decisions. And he went to Florida and he didn't like it and it was fine. And you thought maybe there would be some "I told you so" from the family, like, "Yeah, we told you so. You probably weren't going to really like it at Florida." But they didn't step in and say, "Okay, now we are going to have more influence here. Now we are going to be the adults and say, look, at this is why you need to go to USC." And start, you know, going through that. They still allowed him to make a decision. And at that point right now, it's going to Oregon. So I think, you know, it's probably what you want. And it's just one of those things that we're heading into this era of recruiting with social media and everything that kids are getting their heads filled with a lot of things from a lot of different people. And maybe the parents do have to come in and have to have a greater say. I mean, I totally respect allowing your child to make that decision, because you don't want them to have any animosity. You don't want them to be resentful of you because you forced them to go to a school and then things didn't work out at that school. Because that's sort of a long time issue. You know, that can create a rift for a very long time. You know, I want you to go here. This is where you're going, but I don't want to go there. Nope, this is where you're going. And then the kid blows his ACL or something happens. And then it's, you know, it's like, well, you see, that would have never happened if you wouldn't have made me go to that school. So you don't want that. You don't want that on your head as a father or as a mother. But at the same time, like I said, we're seeing these kids make these decisions, and yet they're indecisive decisions, and they're decisions being made on probably maybe not the right things at that point in time. Maybe they're just getting caught up in what's going on, and it's not that sort of long-term looking at the bigger picture. You know, do I want to live in Southern California the rest of my life, or do I want to live in Texas? You know, do I want the specific things with education, specific things with friends, specific things with just lifestyle? There's all these other impacts. You play football. Football is such a huge part of your life. You know, it becomes sort of the narrative, but as you get older and you start to look around, you start to have other interests. And you start to see that, you know, yeah, football, that's the 1% that make it to the NFL. There's a lot of other percent there that's going to have to end up doing something else for a living. And so let me make sure that I'm around a person so I have other things to fall back on. And once that starts to happen, then you really start to have to look at things outside of football. And, yeah, you know, when you're in high school and it's so easy for you, it's just easy just to assume, yeah, it's football all the time, and I'm just going to be great at football, and I'm just going to stay on this path. But I do think for a kid like Brew McCoy, who's a very articulate kid, a very smart kid, a really great kid, I think, you know, he obviously he's made – I don't want to say he's impulsive, but he's obviously gotten into a place where, you know, he was looking at the here and now maybe more and didn't see how things – didn't project real well and how things might be down the line. And so, but you know, there's probably other things that he can do and other things that, you know, he can be involved with that now, as he gets older, he's starting to think about those things maybe more and more, and they're becoming more important to him, more significant to him. And the fact that perhaps football wasn't going to be a part of his Saturdays this year, you know, that was also sort of maybe some reality setting in, because now you're a little bit, you know, on the sideline a little bit. You're taking a step back. You're not at Mater Dei and you're the star guy and you know where you're going to be Friday night and you know you're going to have to do Friday night in order to win football games. Now you're going to be a redshirt and now you're going to be out of the action. Now you're going to be standing on the sidelines maybe more than you're going to be out there playing. And then again, you start to have time to think a little bit about, you know, if it's just like an injury. You know, I always ask these kids after injuries, you know, how much did this change your perspective on college and life and just, you know, the decisions and your priorities with things? Because you're watching football a lot. Because I know when I got hurt in football, it was just like, wow, man, this is weird. It doesn't feel right. It just, you know, but it's almost like you feel a little alienated even from your friends and your inner circles and everything, because you're not that guy that you were. You're not, you know, in that place. You don't have your spot in the football team. You're now on the outside sort of almost looking in. Even though you're part of the team and everything, you're still on the sideline. And it makes you think of, like, what if this was the way it was for the rest of my life? There's no football. That stuff kind of hits you pretty hard. And, you know, again, conjecture, perhaps that sort of with Brew not having a lot of, wasn't optimistic about playing next year, you start to look at things a little differently in terms of what your priorities are.
We've mentioned Chris Steele a couple of times. I wanted to move on to that. Is this done deal? Is he going to Oregon? Has USC still got a shot? What's going on with the Chris Steele stuff?
I wouldn't say it's a done deal. He has not signed anything binding with Oregon at this point. I believe he's just signed some financial papers, which are not binding. And so we hear, you know, he's still reaching out to USC, and he's still maybe even UCLA. And there's still some talk there that maybe his decision isn't solidified. It would be a bit surprised if he did end up at USC, though. I have to say, I think that he wants to go to Oregon. You know, we've been reporting that from the get-go. He wants to go to Oregon. He has a great relationship with Dante Williams, the cornerbacks coach there. And it's very ironic, you know, that Dante Williams is a name that, you know, USC fans should actually probably know because we've talked about him. We talked about him when he was at Nebraska. And USC had the opportunity when they got that 10th assistant coaching spot opened up by the NCAA that they could bring in another defensive backs coach. And we knew Ronnie Bradford was not very into recruiting, was not very motivated by recruiting. It seemed to make sense that USC would want to bring in a quarterback coach that would be and sort of supplement that a little bit. It's like, okay, fine, you want Ronnie Bradford to be there. He's Clancy's guy. You know, okay, fine. But you need, I mean, you can have two defensive back coaches. You know, that's fine. You have a safety coach and a cornerbacks coach. This guy is a great recruiter. This guy can land you guys. Bring him in to supplement him. Instead, USC decided to bring in two offensive line coaches. But I digress. So now he's up at Oregon. And so he's stealing guys away from USC left and right. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau. There's a lot of bunch of guys that he's been recruiting in Southern California. And Chris Steele's one of those guys. He just has a really good relationship with Chris Steele. Chris Steele doesn't really have a relationship with Greg Burtz. And so that's, I think, really the overriding thing. Now, again, we go back to the whole priorities thing. And, you know, should you be going to a school because of a coach? Probably not. That coach could end up leaving that school next year. He could leave that school next month. But that's sort of where things stand. He just has a better relationship with the Oregon coaches. He's bought into their philosophy and sort of the direction they want with the program. The family still believes USC is the best fit for him overall. And obviously they're looking at things being older adults, things like, you know, degree and then and the education and the networking and the connections and everything else that goes along with going to USC outside of football. So that's really where things stand. It's not a done deal. I would still say I think he probably most likely ends up at Oregon. But the interesting thing about this Brew McCoy story, if we say, okay, Brew McCoy, let's say this later this week, he announces going to the porthole, and then the next day I'm enrolling at USC. That in itself kind of creates momentum. This is a recruiting podcast, but this is not about recruiting now. At least directly, USC can't recruit either of these guys. Well, they can recruit Chris Steele now because he's, you know, he's not no longer with Florida. He's a transfer portal guy still. Until he enrolls at Oregon, you know, there's nothing that says that USC can't be in contact with him. But with Brew McCoy, there's no recruiting right now. I mean, he's still a Texas student. He's still enrolled at Texas, and so there's no recruiting. But indirectly, this has a weird sort of thing that it could create momentum. Brew comes back to USC. Maybe Chris Steele starts to look at it and go, you know, if he thinks USC's got things right, you know, maybe I listen to my parents and I decide I'm gonna go to USC too. You know, he's got friends at USC, you know, players that he's close with and everything. It's really just, you know, Greg Burns came in at the end of his recruitment. Greg Burns was not a guy that, you know, had recruited him at all, really. Being at Oregon State, they didn't really have many conversations. He's not recruiting at that level, Oregon State. It's just, you know, and USC sort of missed out on some guys that maybe Chris Steele liked. You know, that he would have decided, hey, I'll go to USC if they hired this coach. So it was a guy that he didn't know. And so it's really, you know, that's, I think, the sticking point for him. But there's a lot of other reasons where, you know, he could end up at USC. So I think that's why it's still definitely not a done deal. And this Brew McCoy thing sort of maybe could create some momentum for USC. And then if you get Chris Steele that comes back in the fold, then that creates a lot of momentum. And all of a sudden, we've seen USC sort of flat-footed this offseason with recruiting, and there really hasn't been a whole lot to report on recruiting. You know, they're in Texas. They're trying to get some stuff going on in Texas. You got Mike Jinks down there offering kids, and, you know, it's okay. And, you know, everybody's in Texas recruiting. I mean, it's not like USC's going to sneak in there and grab a bunch of four-star guys. So, you know, unless they turn around and have a really great season. So, you know, the momentum, a lot of local kids just not really feeling USC, a lot of top players not feeling USC. They're taking their unofficial visits to Ohio State. They're going to Alabama. They're going to Clemson. They're going to all these schools, and you just see a lineup, it's a queue of kids going out of state. It's like the late 90s. You know, when USC was bad then, even when UCLA was good with Bob Toledo, UCLA didn't do a good job of keeping a lot of the top players close to home. And so it's really one of those things that, you know, USC has to be the school. If there's going to be a national power on the West Coast, it's probably going to be USC. That's the one school that seems to be able to, when they're good and they're winning championships, they keep everybody home. And so this is a weird thing that could kind of create some momentum with them on the recruiting trail. And maybe some of those kids at St. John Bosco and Modern Day and all these other places start to kind of look, you know, these kids left. They went to Florida. They went to Texas. They thought the grass was greener on the other side. And look where they ended up. And that's going to start to play in on their recruitment.
You know, it's funny. When we had a couple weeks back, if you haven't seen it, we had Gavin Morris come on the live show. And you guys, you know, you're listening to Recruiting Podcasts. I'm sure you're familiar with who Gavin Morris is, but he's director of player development for USC. He's basically
assistant AD now.
Assistant
Get
AD.
It right. Well, get that the also, title right.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot. But he's you know, very involved in recruiting. He was on the road recruiting for USC the last 4 years, which, I mean, it's a good sign for him, but it's probably not a great sign for USC where you have to have one of your analysts basically, you know, be on the road recruiting for 4 years in a row. But, you know, because he's good at what he does. And one of the things he kind of talked about was with the transfer portal, if guys are leaving and, you know, you just have to know that they might be calling you, you know, if, hey, you're going to go out of state instead of staying home, we might be talking to you in a year or 3 months later, like in the case of Brew McCoy. But it sounded like he kind of knew that that was like a thing. Like, yep, like guys are going to leave sometimes, but we'll probably get them back.
Yeah, the transfer porthole is a podcast in and of itself. And we've talked about it before, but that is obviously a new thing the NCAA kind of threw out there. And I think the NCAA, in my opinion, is just trying to appease players at this point. They know pay for play is coming, and they're just trying to appease players as long as they can with various things, you know, to try to avoid a revolt of, you know, unionization and kids basically going, okay, we're not playing unless you pay us. And so the NCAA doesn't want that because they don't want to deal with the IRS. They want to remain this quote unquote non-for-profit. So, you know, that's sort of, I think, part of what, you know, has gotten us into this, you know, this realm of all these unique situations, because you're just going to see more and more of it. And, you know, the Pac-12 now, you don't have to sit out a year, or the 2 years or whatever rule they had, where you had to sit out. They've wiped that off the boards as well. So hey, you're going to see a lot of this. And the thing is, though, you know, is it good for college football at the end of the day? You know, when do we sort of come back to the point of going, okay, is it good for the game? Is it good? Because, you know, it may be great for kids to just go, hey, you know, how about making a rule where you could just play for any team you want any week you want? We'll just make it like weekly fantasy football. You know, that'd be great for the kids too. You know, oh, I want to play for this team this year because they're going to play Alabama and I want to play against Alabama. You know, that would be great too, but that's not, at the end of the day, what's going to be good for the game, which in turn ends up being better for the kids, because all the money and everything that goes into it, you know, that ultimately is going to be the resource, the pool that gets them paid. So if college football completely deteriorates because of all these stupid rules and the NCAA is not giving it enough foresight and seeing how it's going to affect the game negatively, there's not going to be anything there at the end for college football to be a pay-for-play type thing, or there be some type of system there, because people will just stop watching it. You know, there's no loyalty there. There's no commitment there. There's nothing they can, you know, kind of grab onto and say, oh, this guy is this big-time player coming out of high school. He's going to lead us to a national championship. You know, that guy's going to be there for a year, and then he's going to bolt, and he's going to go somewhere else. And it's something you said, and you said reputation. Like I said, I get away from that word, but there is sort of that you know, you lose some of the momentum and some of the excitement with something like this that happens. If Brew McCoy stays at USC and he's in spring ball, people are just hyped up to see Brew McCoy at USC in spring ball with Graham Harrell's offense and you know, playing within that system and all this and that. Now he goes to Texas. USC fans have sort of forgotten about him to some extent. You know, he comes back. This is a story, but it's not sort of the first, you know, right out of the gate sort of thing. And even probably for Texas, there was probably a little bit of that as well. Although football in Texas is pretty rowdy. So, I mean, they probably would have been crazy and insane regardless of it. But I think, you know, it does. You know, you get guys like Justin Fields and everybody jumping around, and people just kind of lose track. You know, like passive, you know, casual, you know, Ohio State fan or whoever fan, maybe they don't even realize, oh, this, we got this guy. He's going to be the starter next year. When did he come on the team? I don't remember him getting recruited. Oh no, he transferred in from Georgia. Oh, he's a Georgia guy. You know what I'm saying? So that doesn't really help. I think the college football just in general. And so the more of this, you know, the more that's going to become a question, obviously, and we're going to see if they're going to have to change some rules or adjust some things. But it's a little, I mean, you know, people say it's college football free agency, and they're not totally wrong about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we jump? We got some questions, too. I don't think there's anything else. We kind of.
We have questions, too. Holy cow. I thought that was it. I thought we were done.
We beat that to death. How do we. Yeah, we got 50 minutes in of just kind of talking about stuff. Okay. Nick from Cyprus, Big Nick 21 USC, asked about Chris Steele and Brew McCoy. So we talked about that ad nauseum. I don't know if we can say anything more on those guys. And then his second question, what was the original reason why Brew left and is it Texas? I think we talked about that too.
We don't know the specifics about him leaving Texas at this point, other than just, you know, homesickness and maybe just not feeling like it was going to be the place that he thought it was. And, you know, leaving USC, I think, yeah, we definitely talked about that. So, I mean, that's sort of where things stand. I think we'll get more details, certainly, once it's official, or if it's official that he leaves Texas. But again, I don't know that those details are necessarily going to get into the nitty-gritty of things. I don't think he wants to throw anybody under the bus at Texas, just like he didn't want to throw anybody under the bus at USC.
Yeah. He also wanted to know, what offensive lineman do you think USC stands a good chance of getting? He said this is the biggest position of need outside of defensive backs in his mind. So what do you think about offensive line recruiting?
You know, offensive line recruiting is a big issue right now. It's a big issue for USC. It's a problem. And I don't know if it's going to sort itself out, to be honest with you. I know it's sort of a bleak picture to paint, but certainly the misses last year are going to plague the team, I think, going forward. I just don't think you can get back from that because this class is not great. And, you know, you needed offensive linemen in the last class, and you whiffed. And you whiffed on a good class. And now you're sort of trying to supplement with a bad class. And, you know, they've kind of reached out and done some things trying to get out there nationally. And they've recruited some kids out of Texas, of course, and some other places. But, you know, the guys that they have the best shot at, for the most part, are kind of, I would say, projects. I think they're guys that got to put on a lot of weight, and they've got to they're going to need a year or two in the program before I think they're going to be really ready to be able to come in and play. And so that's kind of an issue. You know, a guy like Jeffrey Percy out of Jay Serra in San Juan Capistrano, three-star guy. I think he's like ranked number 70, 75 in the nation as an offensive tackle. Kid with good height, a good frame, but certainly just not a guy that you're going to throw out there as a freshman to play or to contribute. You know, he's a guy that you're going to have to bring up through the program. And the problem is USC kind of sort of needs some guys that can come in and play right away and make an impact right away. At least guys that at some point during the season are able to come in and be able to play. So that's in general, that's the overview of offensive line recruiting. it's not great, and I don't know that it's going to be great. And it's going to be one of those things, and it reminds me of the year when USC lost out on Monte Teo and Vontaze Burfict. You know, they did get Frankie Telford, and they did get Jarvis Jones, but then Jarvis Jones had the injury, and the USC medical staff wouldn't clear him, so he transferred to Georgia and became a first-round pick. And with Frankie Telford, he had a heart condition that sidelined him. And so USC basically that cycle completely whiffed on some really good linebackers. I mean, really good linebackers. Oh, I mean, three of those guys ended up in the NFL. And what happened right before that? They lost all those linebackers to the NFL. Kaluka Maivea, Brian Cushing, Ray Maluga. That sort of reminds me a little bit of what just happened with USC and the offensive line. Obviously, they didn't lose a bunch of great offensive linemen, the guys that are all in the NFL, but they did lose solid offensive linemen from a very good class, and they didn't follow up with a cycle that could really replace those guys. And so, yeah, I just don't know what they're going to get out of this class. Miles Morrow is a guy that, you know, they're doing well with. He's a guard, 6'3", 275. He's actually just come back from a pretty serious injury and was at the Nike camp up north and kind of surprised people showing up to perform and look good. He's a guy that's, like I said, going to be interior guy. He's going to play guard. You know, perhaps he plays center. That's a player that I think that they have a pretty good place for right now. They're still recruiting, you know, Colorado and Arizona. It's a good year for both those states, but there's not really anybody that they have a lot of traction with. There's no players that, you know, I feel like, okay, yeah, this is a guy that, you know, is 100% a guy that they lead for. And that's another issue. I mean, sort of, you know, the guys that are, I wouldn't say local. I mean, Colorado isn't necessarily local, but the guys that regionally, at least, that they need to have a foot in the door with aren't really giving them the time of day, you know, the highly ranked guys. They did have Andrew Gentry, who's a 6'8", 310-pound offensive tackle from Colorado, from Colomon High School. You know, he came out and visited. I believe he's LDS. And if not LDS, I think he's probably leaning towards other schools. Just got the vibe talking to Blair Angulo and some other sources that was going to be a tough pull for USC, you know. The one guy that I think that they have a real good shot at is out in Tampa, kind of a, you know, like, again, it's kind of outside the region. They're recruiting Connor McLaughlin, who's a 6'7", he's about 250, 260-pound offensive tackle. He's a four-star. He's got some decent offers. He's out of Jesuit High School in Tampa Bay. Another guy that's sort of like Jeffrey Percy is a lean guy that's sort of still growing into his body. He was, I think, 235 last year. So he's just getting to 260 now. And, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, he's not a guy you're going to be able to count on for next season, maybe not even the season after that. And that's sort of where they are with offensive linemen. There's a lot of guys there that seem to be some projects, some guys are going to have to put some weight on. The players that you would think are guys that would come in right away aren't really giving USC looks. Now, will that change if they win games? You know, this is the whole thing. This is why recruiting is sort of dead, because they're really, as a program, in limbo. USC has sort of, you know, they have Clay Helton on the hot seat. You have all this talk of Urban Meyer. You don't know what's going on with the direction of the program and the university in general, because the new president hasn't really come in and really made any hirings or firings. There's just a lot of questions. And so, you know, if Clay Helton can pull everything together and they go out there and they win 11 games, then, you know, that just changes everything, you know, and we just don't know how much it's going to change. I think Tim Drevno is a good offensive line coach. I think he should have been the guy that was brought in immediately as offensive line coach and not had to stay at running back coach. I think he's a good recruiter, but he's got to get his guys in. And the biggest question is going to be, do his guys fit what Graham Harrell wants to do offensively? Because that's still a question. You know, Tim Drevno has not coached in an air raid type offense, and I keep hearing how it's not a big deal. And that always sinks in the back of my head, because usually it is a big deal, and it is something that there has to be an adjustment there. So That's going to be the big question as well. Maybe that's part of recruiting a little more undersized guys, but I think also that there's not really been a choice there. I mean, USC still offered a bunch of guys that are 320. It's just those 320, four and five star guys really aren't giving USC much of a look.
All right, we got a text question. Didn't say who it's from, but said, "Hey, everyone, love the podcast and appreciate the work you do for the team. Can someone give me updates on the recruitment of the following players and where USC stands with them?" You want me just, I'll do one at a time if you want. Just give me a quick update. You don't have to go too much. We'll do quick stuff on these guys. Justin Flo.
USC is still in a very good place with Justin Flo. A lot of people kind of have written him off to the SEC. I think right now it's USC and the SEC. You know, it's going to be a battle. And if USC falls on their face again next season, he's going to be another guy that's probably going to be looking to go and leave the state and go play at Alabama or Georgia. But if they can win games, I think he wants to stay home, and I think he'll go to USC.
Then Kendall Milton.
USC's pretty much out of it for him. I believe he put out a top four. They were really not in great communication with him. Kind of an odd thing when we spoke to him up at the Nike camp in Oakland. He talked about Kerry Colbert and John Baxter being his primary recruiters. Didn't really have a lot of communication with Mike Jenks. I think that kind of told us everything we needed to know about, you know, where USC stood with his recruitment, and recently basically cut USC out of his recruitment. So no Kendall Milton for USC.
What about Bijan Robinson?
A little more of a chance. Bijan Robinson probably takes an official visit to USC. You know, he's liking UCLA a lot. He likes other schools. Ohio State's in there. Oklahoma's kind of trying to make a run for him. I think Oklahoma probably ends up with Kendall Milton, although, you know, that, I mean, there's still a lot of, I think, recruitment still left with Kendall Milton. Robinson, they're sort of in the picture. They're on the outside looking in, but they are still in the picture.
Okay. And then Elias Ricks.
It's USC and LSU. Right now, he's pretty sold on LSU. You know, again, a guy that I think would want to go to USC, you know, like Flo. But it's just, if USC shows that they're just not an option because they're not playing football on the level of these other schools, they're just not going to go to USC. So it's one of those things. He's going to go to LSU. If USC doesn't either make a huge turnaround next season, or they hire, you know, a guy like Urban Meyer and they show that they are invested in football and that they want to win championships in football. If they go and hire a guy that's just a young guy, you know, another guy they think they can control and just keep on pushing the same narratives, you know, those kids are not going to go to USC. So you have to make a statement with that hiring, or Clay Helton himself has to make a statement next year by winning a bunch of games.
And then the last thing he said was USC needs running backs in this cycle. Which running backs do we have the best shot at?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, I think this is a position where, you know, Mike Jenks is kind of running around in Texas a little bit. He's trying to find some guys. It's kind of up in the air. I don't know. I don't know if there's a guy that USC has the best shot at. I haven't really gotten the vibe that there's one player that sort of stands out as kind of their guy. And I think, you know, that's the thing with Mike Jenks. He's done it with guys that have been, how would you say it, just underrated type of players. You know, he can kind of find a niche. And the thing is that this offense is unique. We kind of have to see how they use the running game in this offense. You know, is it going to be the sort of Washington State where you pass the ball more to the running back? Or are they going to do what we saw in spring ball? They run the ball just pretty much straight out of the shotgun, which is not a whole lot different than they've been doing in past few years. And they're still using tight ends on the field. The tight end is usually split out and not necessarily having his hand in the ground. But, you know, it's not the five receiver type of thing. And so we're going to have to see what type of running back really sort of fits and who ends up emerging from the running backs that they have now at USC. You know, we've seen Marquis Stepp actually play pretty well. That's a guy who's 6 foot, 230, 240 pounds. That's not the kind of guy that Mike Jenks was coaching at Texas Tech. So that's kind of the thing, really. We're trying to figure out what works with USC in this offense, this type of offense at USC. And I think running backs in general really want to see this season how much the position has been used, because everybody talks about passing the ball more, and that's working well with the receivers. See, the receivers are all about that. Talk to a receiver, say, hey, what do you like about USC? Oh, man, they're putting the ball in the air. They're going to get the ball in my hands. I love that. With the running backs, that's the opposite, obviously. If you're putting the ball in the receiver's hands, you're not putting the ball in the running back's hands. So those guys are all kind of waiting around to see, how much are they going to run the ball? There's still going to be a featured back. Is it going to be backed by committee, et cetera? And so I think that's probably why there's not one guy that's kind of standing out as a guy that they have a great shot at over others. I mean, there's guys that have high interest in USC. Jawan Collins down in Arbonne is a guy that still has a lot of high interest in USC. But he's been a little bit of a ghost this offseason. Kind of haven't seen much of him, haven't heard much of him. He hasn't even been a part of the team at Narbonne during spring ball and the 7-on tournaments that we've seen. So that's kind of an interesting thing. We're not really sure 100% what's going on with him. Locally, there's not like a lot of fantastic running backs either that are jumping, off the radar. So we're going to have to see. There's not a lot of names there right now for USC that are big names, at least, that USC has a lot of traction on. So, again, so much about recruiting has sort of been dead because I think there's just wait and see on everybody's, There's some wait and see for USC, but then there's wait and see on the recruits' ends, too. They want to see what goes on. You talk to a guy a perfect example is Logan Loya. Talk to Logan Loya, and, that's a guy you would figure – God, he's perfect for that offense. Like, that's the perfect kind of precise route runner, great hands, really smart kid, using that space, not necessarily just trying to out-athlete everybody. Those offenses at Washington State and Texas Tech are prolific, not because they just have better athletes. It's because they have guys who fit roles. And that's a guy that you would see specifically would fit that role and be really good in that type of offense. But even he's like, yeah, great offer. It's cool. Saw them play during the spring. Yeah, they look good. But I really want to see them playing a game. He's not getting caught up in any of this stuff with Graham Harrell and all this other, they're going to throw the ball this many times and they're going to score this many. He wants to see it in action. He wants to see it against Fresno State. He wants to see it against Utah. He wants to see it against Stanford. So, that tells me that there's really that sentiment, I think, lies with a lot of these recruits. And certainly with the running back position, just because the hype has been around this pass offense. And nobody's really talking about how the running backs are going to be used.
Yeah. All right. We had Matt in the OC. He wants to know how the line recruiting is going. We've talked about the offensive line recruiting before, but maybe you can touch on the defensive line recruiting a bit just overall. He says, looking at the scholarship distribution chart, we need some guys on both sides for 2020 to develop a year before receiving playing time. And he wants to know if the West Coast is deep this year. So you talked about the offensive line stuff, so maybe do it on the defensive side now.
Yeah, the defensive line, it's better in terms of talent. There's more players there. But in terms of going out of state, and that's always been the thing with USC is, how do you go down the South? Everybody thinks that you got to go to the SEC to get great defensive linemen. They had been doing a better job. And obviously that 2017 class getting the Polynesian defensive linemen. The guys that are really, that carry the weight and are the 300 pounders coming out of high school. Because the thing with the West Coast and specifically Southern California is you don't have a lot of guys that are really that built coming out of high school. You got to put weight on those guys. You get a lot more Christian Rectors than you're going to get Marlon Tui Pelotus, right? You're not getting guys that are that sort of ready-made, ready-to-play 310-pound guys that you're going to put in the interior of the defensive line. There are a lot of guys that are 250, 260 in California, Southern California, that you have to put weight on to become those guys. But the Polynesian players, and you get guys out of Utah and you get out of Hawaii, sometimes those guys, you can get a little more maturity and a little more weight, and those guys can be bigger impact players as interior linemen. So it's that, or you, like I said, go to the SEC, and USC obviously is not going to have any success going to the SEC getting defensive linemen at 5-7. You're just not going to get that much. Marlon Tui Pelotu actually has a little brother, Tui Pelotu, and he's at, I think he's at Lawndale High School. a guy that USC's recruiting, and I think they have a really good shot at. He's a three-star, though. He's not a big-time guy, and he's, you know, not quite as big as his brother, but I think he'll definitely grow, and I think he'll fill out a little more. He's about 6'3", 6'4", about 250, 260 pounds right now. His brother was obviously, you know, like 295 to like 300 pounds coming out of high school. But I think eventually he'll get there, and that's a guy that USC has a decent shot at. You know, there's really not a lot of dudes that I can think of that they have like a great shot at that are really big time players. Again, you know, wait and see. The defensive line just, it's going to be sort of a hodgepodge of guys from, I think, Utah and trying to grab guys from the Northwest. There's just not a lot of names that are jumping out as big time players that USC is going to be able to just bring in, and they're going to be able to play right away. I don't know. It's just, there's this, again, this is podcast. It's like now it's trailing into back into the negativity and sort of, we started out with the big, Brew McCoy and, you know, maybe Chris Steele and everything. And now we're back into the dreads of, yeah, but this is sort of what USC is right now. And yeah, there's not, you know, a bunch of guys lined up that are 4 or 5 star guys normally that we're talking about that are like, yeah, you know, I'm high in USC. They're in my top three. Just not that way right now. There's just a bunch of guys that are out there that are sort of players that we're kind of trying to figure out. There's guys that they're offering that are guys that they're going to have to sort of develop, and they're going to have to get bigger and get stronger. But that's when you're 5-7 and you don't look like you're putting much investment into football. That's what you get. That's where you are. You become, you know, a step above a mid-major. You're not going to be considered a blue blood program. And these kids are going to go out and they're going to get sucked into the hype of playing in the SEC. Cause you know, the only way you get to the NFL is to play in the SEC.
That's the only way. We had a question from Jim B. He said, small question. Is Bryce Young growing? I've seen films of him when he was a junior. He looks a lot bigger now. Fight on. From Jim.
A lot bigger. I wouldn't say he's a lot bigger. I'm sure he is growing. I'm sure he's gotten taller. I don't know how to answer that question other than to say, yes, he's growing, but I don't think he's, you know, a lot bigger than he was, a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think he looks bigger. I wouldn't say he's like, you know, enormous now compared to what he was before, but kind of along the same lines, a quarterback question. David wrote in, with DJU committed to Clemson, it looks like we made the right decision going after Bryce Young instead. The question he has, or the questions are, had we gone all in on DJU, what do you think are the chances we would have landed him, and exactly how committed do you think Bryce Young is? That's from David.
That's a tough question to answer.
Bryce Young's pretty committed.
I guess the first question that I can answer that because, you know, it's really hypothetical. Okay, USC just recruits DJ, you know, did they get DJ? DJ liked USC. But, you know, if you've got Clemson calling and you've got all these other schools, you know, how does that kind of play out? You know, obviously with Bryce, he's got those schools calling as well. I think with Bryce, there's more connection to USC. And there's another guy that when you talk about Brew McCoy and the Brew McCoy story, plays an impact. You know, he was the quarterback for Brew, and he and Brew are close. And I think that, you know, everybody can see a mile away that if they continue with this offense, regardless of what happens with Clay Helton, that's an offense that's going to fit Bryce Young very well. It should fit JT Daniels well. Just, you know, in general, you just look at even stylistically, they're different players. You're still just the way you spread the ball and the way those guys came up through high school. Those are kind of the offenses that they're very familiar with. Now, in terms of how committed he is, Oregon's recruiting him hard. Oregon obviously struck out on DJ. Now they're kind of trying to play it off like, oh, we didn't really want him anyways. We really wanted you, Bryce. But that's, you know, obviously, I think, you know, Bryce kind of knows that. But he's still interested. He's still, you know, and Oregon's a possibility. Oklahoma's there. How committed is he? He's as committed as, you know, Clay Helton getting fired and then bringing in a head coach that is just underwhelming. You know, I mean, we could play hypotheticals and say, you know, maybe USC, let's say they fire Clay Helton and then they go hire Justin Wilcox. that would be sort of a USC thing to do right now. You know, Justin Wilcox, he has some familiarity with USC. He's a connection to USC. He's a younger coach, you know, smart guy. And they say, oh, we know we're going to go with defense now because we're going to be a defensive team. And it's like, you know, does Bryce Young stay committed to USC if they make that move? Probably not. I could see if they lose and they have another bad season and then that's your move. And I don't want to make that sound like, you know, that's a shot at Justin Wilcox, but it's just in terms of, you know, the expectations of where the program should be and the guys that you should be going after. And if you have two seasons there where you're a losing football team and then that's your answer, you know, that's Bryce Young is probably going somewhere else. Probably quite a few of those guys are going somewhere else. You're going to have to, after a bad season, hire somebody that's got some name recognition, some guy that's won some championships, somebody who can come in and show somebody off a ring. You got to have a little bling. There's got to be a little twinkle on that guy's hand when he walks in on the in-home visit in November and sits down and says, I'm going to turn this football program around. And I can tell you that because I've done it other places. If you don't bring somebody in that can do that after you have to fire Clay Helton, who, like I said, Bryce Young really likes a lot, and a lot of these players like a lot of these players. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Everybody likes Clay Helton. You know, it's not like anybody doesn't like Clay Helton. That's always a reason why a lot of the kids talk about USC fondly, even when they're big, you know, on the verge of dropping them from their top four or top five list. They still talk about, you know, I really like Clay Helton. If Clay Helton could win at USC, then, you know, it would be fine. Recruiting would be fine. They would have no issues. But it's one of those things that, you know, when he's on the hot seat and they're losing football games, then it becomes quite an issue. So I don't say that, you know, certainly Bryce Young is no lock to USC. Not at all. He's very committed to USC. He likes USC. He likes the direction the offense is going in. But USC's got to win games next year, or they got to come in and hire a coach that has done it somewhere else. That's the bottom line. I think that's it, cut and dry. Clay Helton has to win 10, 11 games at minimum, or they have to hire a coach that's done it somewhere else and done it several times and been consistent doing it.
All right, we got a couple more. We'll let you go, Gerard. Anthony, he says, how's it going, Peristyle crew? Looking back at the recruiting class, I feel we went too large with the number of recruits that play in the secondary. Do you think a couple more recruits on the offensive line or wide receivers would have been more ideal, or did the staff get it right? Thanks for the great show. I have 9 wins for the Trojans this year. Fight on, Anthony.
Ooh, 9 wins. That's the 8-9 wins is where we're sitting around trying to figure out what is the move, you know. Obviously, you know, you say 9 wins now, it's always a how those 9 wins sort of manifest, right? Like if they lose a lot in the beginning of the season, can they keep Clay Helton around long enough that he can get to 9 wins where there's an argument that he should be retained? Or does he win early and then they start to drop games and then the momentum at the end of the season is to fire him? That's going to be the interesting thing when you start to talk about 8 or 9 wins and whether he's retained with that number of wins. But anyways, I digress. What was the question?
Should
they got more receivers and offensive linemen?
Yeah.
Not really receivers. I think they're okay at wide receiver. Obviously they'd be more okay if they had Brew McCoy there. But I think with offensive linemen, they just didn't have a choice. There was no quality offensive linemen. They took some reaches on offensive line, you know, in the class. So, and maybe some reaches, even the defensive back. I think they were just scrambling to try to get the numbers up, you know, to try to stay close to that 85 number. You know, it was one of those things where we were looking at it saying, I mean, are they going to get past 80 here? Are they going to be able to broach 80 with the guys that they have offered and the guys that they need to offer? So those offers sort of went out fast and furious a bit at the end, and they were scrambling, I think, at that position. Should they have, you know, maybe kept one or whatever? It's more the question, should they have maybe kept some scholarship offers for the transfer season, which is now, you know, what we're calling it. And we saw that, you know, we knew that there was going to be, with this whole porthole stuff, that there's going to be more and more guys that are going to be grad transfers, that are going to be regular transfers leaving. And so you can't, you don't want to be too close on your initials, and you don't want to be too close to 85 on your overall roster spot. So that's probably more of the question. I think, you know, with USC was basically just, hey, let's just get who we can get, you know, a bird in the hand, if you will. And offensive line, they just struck out on so many guys. There, I don't know if there really was a lot of options to go grab guys that were solid players that you'd be bringing in that gave you that either or. That there was really was a decision there. I think they just had a shot at, in terms of just quality and best players available, it was the secondary players. Those guys are probably the better players than the guys if they would have just said, okay, we're going to hold back two scholarships and give an offensive lineman. I don't know who was on the board at that point at offensive line that you would bring in would have been guys that would have really contributed.
All right, we got one last one. SC May, Gerard. He says, GM, of the top 15 recruiting classes in 24/7, these teams have anywhere from 7 commitments up to 16. USC has shown the last 2 years that they have not changed their recruiting strategies with the new early national signing day, and we're scrapping this last December to fill the class. Are they again going to miss the boat because they are not working hard now for commitments? Isn't the wait till the season plays out kind of an excuse? And frankly, lazy recruiting? When I see teams like Miami and FSU who just had an underwhelming year, as an underwhelming year as USC, with the number of four-star guys as they do, it makes me wonder. Your thoughts from SC Made.
Well, Miami's got a new coaching staff. And anytime you've got a new coaching staff, you have momentum. You get to wipe the slate clean. You basically get to come in as a coaching staff and make all kinds of promises. You know, you're our guys. You're our first class we're recruiting. You guys are all going to get playing time. You're all going to play as true freshmen right away. And everything is cotton candy and rainbows. And then, you know, a couple years go by, and then players on the team are disgruntled because they're not playing or somebody didn't play as a true freshman. And then things start to play out a little more, and you get a realistic view of sort of what the program looks like. So right now, Miami is kind of a bad comparison. Florida State is kind of a bad comparison, too, because even though Willie Taggart was there last year and they had a dismal season, they had a terrible season, he's still relatively new. And he's still going to be able to make some of those promises. And obviously, with a bad football team, he's going to be able to try to kind of turn things around and say, look, you know, these were the guys that were left over from Jimbo Fisher. They were an underachieving team anyways. I have to change the culture, yada, yada, yada. And that's still sort of in play for him. Now, if he loses this year again, he's probably going to get fired pretty soon. So, I mean, it's not going to really matter. But, I mean, and then it's, you know, the recruiting class is going to fall apart on them. For USC, yeah, there's a little bit of, you know, sort of putting off recruiting from a strategic standpoint. I do get that sense. But I also get the sense that I don't know how much choice they have. You don't want to just fill up on a bunch of dudes that are guys. And USC in past years have filled up on some guys that we knew almost then were not going to probably make the recruiting class. You know, there are guys you kind of look at and go, yeah, they took that commitment? Like, why? Really? That's interesting. And then October, November rolls around, and all of a sudden you hear, oh, this guy's going to decommit, quote unquote. So it's not like they haven't taken some of those guys before and then moved on once they had the great season. In terms of aggressiveness, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you still have some recruiters in the program that maybe are not as diligent and they really don't like recruiting as much. And then also it's a little bit of, you know, the kids themselves are sort of waiting to see what's going to happen with USC. You know, USC is going to, how can I put this, tomorrow, tight end, three-star, Marietta Valley, three-star tight end, Jack Yari, is going to announce his college decision. And so USC is waiting for that. So that's a possible commitment that they could get. There's a couple guys here over the summer that they could get commitments from. I don't think it's going to be, you know, like I said, there's going to build a whole lot of momentum unless this whole Brew McCoy, Chris Steele thing sort of creates momentum in and of itself. And like I said, it's basically you would have two guys on your team that could kind of recruit against out-of-state recruiting. And certainly if you, again, if USC can win games, having Brew McCoy and even a Chris Steele on the roster to basically host in home or host official visits, you know, for kids like, let's say, I'm trying to think of time, you know, a Justin Flo type of kid that, you know, looking at all these different options out of state and enamored with Alabama and everything and Florida, and you sit them down and you have them, you know, hosted by a Chris Steele, who's gone through that process, who's seen the other side and could say, well, you know what, man, that's great on a Saturday. And when you're there and you're on an unofficial visit and everybody's got the red carpet treatment out for you, but you know, this is what it's really like to live in Gainesville. And that, that would be a pretty powerful thing for USC if they were able to have sort of that ace up their sleeve with guys like Brew McCoy and Chris Steele, on the roster. But like I said, that doesn't really become a factor unless you're playing games and you're competitive from your team standpoint on the field with those guys. If you're losing seven games, it doesn't matter who you got on the roster. Kids are going to go, I don't want anything to do with that team. It's a dumpster fire. And, you know, we'll see who they're going to bring in as the next head coach.
All right, Gerard, great stuff. How long did we go? This was pretty long, I think. Yeah, almost an hour and a half. That's pretty good. But lots of newsy stuff that we had to talk about. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, it started off strong, but then we kind of get back into the state of recruiting right now for USC. And, you know, I mean, Jack Yari announces tomorrow. We think USC is in a very good place for him. Tied in that his dad actually thinks he should probably end up playing defensive line. A lot of people talked about whether he maybe grow into an offensive lineman. You know, perhaps, again, that's a guy that becomes an elite player, maybe at another position. There's a lot of those guys sort of on USC's board, especially when you talk about the line. There's a lot of guys that are not those immediate impact players from a size speed standpoint. They're guys you're going to have to get in the program. You're going to have to build up. You're going to have to develop those guys. And that, again, is something, you know, that USC has not done well. We look at the draft and we look at things and, you know, the Biggie Marshall effect of a guy that's a five-star that comes in as, you know, looked at as a generational talent by so many people in Southern California, and then he leaves and he's, you know, a fourth round pick, and people kind of go, okay, you know, all right, that's sort of how USC's doing. That's sort of an admission of guilt for USC coaching and the development those players have had. So USC's got to turn all that around. I mean, it's again, it's there's a lot to turn around too. It's not just, you know, winning games next season, but it's showing that you're developing your players and you're getting those guys and they're getting drafted, because that's a huge part of recruiting. And that's a lot of these kids are very myopic when it comes to what schools they pick. It's about who can get me to the NFL. That's all it's about.
Yeah. Getting in the NFL is a big deal, even though it's not a good percentage of guys that make it, but that's what people care about. All right. Well, good stuff, Gerard. We'll let you get back to the boards and calling your sources and all that kind of fun stuff, but it should be an interesting rest of the week. The weekend started with a bang, and here we are, and we'll keep riding this wave and see how it goes.
Yep, definitely. And we're going to have the USC camps coming up in June, so we'll see how that goes. And they're going to have an offensive lineman camp and the defensive lineman camp, which I think is a good idea. And they're going to try to find some guys through that and see if, you know, some of these kids, they can develop some actual targets that can play down the line. You know, maybe there's some guys that show up that are sleepers and whatnot. Not a great year. Like I said, not a great year for offensive linemen or defensive linemen, really not for offensive linemen. And so it's going to be a year where USC is going to have to really do a lot with evaluation. You know, I mean, it's not just going to be about recruiting and convincing kids to come to USC. It's evaluating these guys and projecting some of these kids that are in that 260 range and seeing, you know, what they're going to be able to play like when they're at 300 pounds.
Yeah. All right. Well, great stuff, Gerard. Everyone, remember, if you're still listening, we have our State of Troy or State of the Union event Saturday. Gerard will be there if you want to come in and talk some Brew McCoy. Chris Steele, all kinds of fun stuff. We will be at the Common Space Brewery in Hawthorne, California, Saturday, June 1st. From 3 to 6, we'll have Arash Markazi there, Bruce Feldman's there, Jake Olson is going to be there. So some cool guests. Hope you guys can make it out. But thanks again, Gerard, And thanks everyone else out there listening to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next time.